Welcome to Madlit Musings, the podcast where we dive into the minds of authors, exploring the profound realms of faith, social issues, and the delightful world of entertainment. I'm your host, Jamie Jill Wright, and on this literary journey, you never quite know what you're going to get. Head on over to YouTube where you can check out your favorite authors and yours truly as we chat up about books, about all the strange and weird subjects we like to talk about here at Madlit Musings. And you can even see our faces because it's video, because it's YouTube. So go check it out, Madlit Musings, right now. Are you still here? Go! Check it out! It's on YouTube. Hi, everyone. It is Jamie Jill Wright here at Madlit Musings. And today we have with us Tara Johnson. Hello, friend.
Hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. I'm alive. I'm vertical. That's what I tell everybody. I'm upright. So I'm
good.
Oh,
yeah. You know, but being not vertical is okay, too. You
if
know,
you're asleep,
that
it's
whole
wonderful.
Just like pretend you're dead thing. And it just feels really comforting.
You get warm and cozy. And
yeah.
I don't knock either one.
Did you ever, oh wow, I'm really digressing super fast. Like we haven't been on for 30 seconds and I'm already going off on a tangent. But did you ever hear the song about the worms when you're dead? My mom used to sing it to me. The worms crawl in.
Yes, the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. Yep, I remember
the
that one.
The pinnacle on your snout.
So, okay, this is how twisted my face. Yeah, we're really going off. We're doing our own thing.
Right, that's okay.
My mom, I used to be scared of the bathtub drain. And I was real little. Yeah. I remember being afraid. Like I would get out as soon as that drain was pulled.
It's totally
and
reasonable.
I realized later it was because of the song my mom used to sing. She used to go, "Alice, where are you going? Upstairs to take a bath. Alice with legs like toothpicks and a neck like a giraffe, raff, 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 raff. Alice stepped in the bathtub, gently pulled out the plug. Oh my gracious, bless my soul. There goes Alice down the hole. Alice, where are you going?" And the end just goes bloop, bloop, bloop. And then she said, "Well, I don't know why that would scare you." I said,
"Because
"Why do you
Alice
think
is
it would
stuck."
be? Alice got sucked down the drain, Mom."
Oh my goodness. Yeah. And then my brain would have taken it further, thinking, oh, now she's dead and her hand's going to come up and grab me
Going
and
to
take
come
me
up and
down
grab
too.
me, grab my ankles.
So I will tell this story just because it's you and we'll pretend no one's listening. But speaking of things that you're afraid of when you're a kid, and then we'll get to your book because you're on here for a reason. But
It's fine.
anyway, things you're afraid of. So I was convinced when I was a kid that when you get up in the middle of the night and you use the bathroom, you flush and run. Okay. Because you have to be back in your bed with feet off the floor.
Yes.
Before everything goes down the drain.
Okay.
And my bathroom was literally just outside my bedroom door. The reason you have to do that is because if you don't, there's a skeleton that comes up through the septic and drags you down. I don't
Wow.
know where this came from. I was not terrorized as a child, but that was my firm belief, right?
No one grabbed you in the toilet or anything.
No, no,
No,
no,
there've been no
but it was,
reason.
I grew up, dude. I grew up, I called you dude. I
That's
seriously just
okay.
called you dude.
That's
I
fine.
grew up flush, run. So then I get married, okay? And I don't realize that I still have the habit of flushing and running, not because I'm afraid of the skeleton. It's just now instinct. Like
Yes.
you flush, you run. So we have this narrow hallway in our newly married home. And I get up in the middle of the night and I go down the hallway. I do what I need to do. It's pitch black in the house. And I flush and I run. Well, I can't see anything, right? So I'm
Right.
running with my hands out. And all of a sudden I hit this massive wall and my hands go thwack and I go flying backwards, land on the floor, realize at the same moment that I just body slammed my poor husband who's coming down to use the bathroom.
Oh
He steps over me, looks down and goes, "You're an idiot." He just keeps walking because he knew all about my flush and run. And he's like, "You are in your late 20s. And you're still flushing and running. It serves
I
you
mean,
right."
that's a lot of pressure. You're on a clock. I mean,
I
you have to
know.
beat the tank filling up.
It is,
So.
especially when you have a hallway. Like when I was a kid, I just had a corner to run around. This was a full-on
It's a
hallway.
whole hallway.
Yes.
Well, I'm gonna try that tonight just to see what happens. So
Yeah,
I'm gonna
do it.
flush and
Do
run and
it.
see
Flush
what
and
my
run.
family does.
I mean,
So
if you want to be terrorized, you flush, but then you don't run and you wait because it's terrifying. I mean, even if the skeleton never comes up the toilet, you're still terrified that he's going to. And it's just
yeah,
the
well, it's the
whole.
thought of it. That's always that's what fear does. It's just the thought of
Is.
something.
It is. So, listeners, if you're listening to this podcast today with me and Tara Johnson, leave us a message. If you flush and run, or do you flush and hover to see what comes up
That's the
from the
brave
depths?
folks.
In the
Those are
darks. It only works at
brave.
night, though. You can't do it in the
Okay,
daytime.
so here's a question too then.
Okay.
Do you sleep with your if your feet are hanging off the bed, are they covered or uncovered? Because that was my thing. I
Your
didn't want anyone to grab my ankles.
feet, you can't sleep with your feet off the bed.
I know my husband sleeps with his feet off the bed, and I said,
No.
"You are a psychopath. What if
Yes.
somebody's under the bed and they reach up for your foot and drag you down to hell? I mean, that's not right."
No,
So,
I
and
know.
I've never once thought of that. I was like,
How do you not think of that?
I don't know. I'm a preacher's kid. I think of all the dark stuff. So,
Oh, I know that.
it's
Me
where we live.
too. Me
You're a
too. Maybe
preacher's
it's a
kid.
PK thing. Maybe it's a PK thing where you're just you grow up and you just know evil exists
Yeah,
and it
because you hear
will
about it
eat
all
you
the time.
alive.
Yeah, because we're either part of it or we're being preached to about it,
Right.
one or
Otherwise,
the
we're in
other.
bed praying that hedge of thorns around us. I
Yes.
tell you, Jesus, make the thorns 20 inches long.
You know what's so funny about that to me, and it didn't hit me why that bugged me when I was younger. But Satan is the one who originally quoted
Right.
the hedge of protection, and I'm like, should we really be quoting Satan? But everybody I know does it.
And I don't know,
Everybody,
like,
I've
is
done
the
it, you know.
right, did the hedge of thorns concept, you know, it's so funny to be in a group too. This is where I'm horrible. I'll get with a group of friends that aren't believers and I'll take them through the tour of Christian jargon and Christian terminology. And we all end up rolling on the floor laughing, but it's a creative way to be a witness because you actually
Absolutely.
seriously get to tell them like the reasons why you say these things. And they're like, oh, so they learn all about your faith. But you start laughing like they're like, yeah, you go into your church and you're thinking about like drinking the blood. And it
Yes.
sounds so like, oh, horrific. But
Yeah.
it's not. It just sounds that way. Like the
It
word,
sounds creepy, but yeah.
it sounds
Well,
very
that's like all the
creepy.
big words like sanctification and justification. And I was asking my son, our pastor was talking about one of them the other day. And he goes, I said, you know what that means? He goes, it's one of those Asian words. I'll figure it out when I'm older. Yeah, kind of like that sounds so churchy. I'm not even going to worry about it at this age. You know, I was like, that's fair.
My
So.
friend and I would keep dollar bills, and when our pastor would drop a big word that we didn't understand, we'd just pass a dollar bill down the
Oh,
pew.
that's funny. I mean,
There's the
you can
word.
rack up. Yeah.
There's the word. There
There it is. No idea what that means.
is. All right. Well, anyway, thanks for joining the podcast today. It's been great having you here.
My pleasure. This is what I do. I hope people were ministered to by this. So.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure we're gonna have lots of people coming into a deeper faith because of our
Yes.
skeletal toilet discussions and hedge of thorns.
I
Wow,
feel closer to God
digression
already.
on a whole entirely different level. I'm also really tired today, so I'm like flaky, and that doesn't
I
help
am
when I'm doing
too.
a podcast.
I am too. I feels like you've been up all night at a bunking party
Yes,
and you're just about to drop,
absolutely.
but you're still got the sillies. That's
Yes. All right, so you've written books, though. Let's talk
I
about those.
have written books and there are no flush and runs in any of my books, so
No flush and runs. Well, we need to add that in one book. I think between you
and
and
we
me,
can
we
do
should get
that.
the flush and runs, the feet hanging off. That sounds really bad.
I'm We have the same agent. Let's call her and say we have a great idea for a collaboration. It's called Flush and Run and Feet Hanging Off.
We
So,
could write cozy mysteries called the flush and
cozy
runs.
mysteries. There you go. The flush. If any of this makes
Wow.
it to air, I'll be surprised.
They don't know. I don't edit these. They go full on unless
I'm
there's something
glad because I don't like
remarkably
it when things
horrible.
get. I don't like it when
No,
things get
I like
super
the
edited.
real.
Yeah.
You've got to be real. I mean, if something happens, like every now and then we've had interruptions with children and stuff. So those types of things I'll edit out for the sake of
Right.
their, families and things like
Right.
that. But other than that, I'm sorry, people. You get what you get of Mad
This
Lit
is us.
musings. That's why I call it Mad Lit, because it's just you don't know what's coming out. You
It
just
that makes it
don't know.
fun.
Yeah,
It
it's more
makes it.
interesting to listen to, I guess.
Yes.
But okay, so you've written a book. It's coming out in March, right?
Yes.
It's called To Speak His Name. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. This book was a challenge. I was told by half of my friends and families, you can't write this, and the other ones, you have to write this. So what do? You know, when that
Right.
comes, you just follow God's. And I tried to not write it, and it kept calling to me. And then my critique partner, Michelle Greep, I stopped halfway through, and Michelle said, "You're gonna finish this book, and you're gonna do it this year, and I will beat you up if you don't. It needs to be sold." And I said, "Okay." But basically, I had several different things going on in the
Okay.
story. I was fascinated. I am fascinated by selective mutism, and my niece has selective mutism, and a little girl in my Sunday school class that I teach, she does. And so I've learned a lot about it. But you know, this is what historical writers do. They think, I wonder how they would have dealt with that 200 years ago.
Right.
So I kept dwelling on how would that have looked, you know, in the 1800s. They would have been considered backwards, just labeled mute and called, you know, names. People would have assumed they were dumb. And so this kind of niggle of an idea started with about selective mutism. And at the same time, I don't know why, my daughter was playing some song on her radio one day, and I usually don't pay attention to her music because it's very trendy and cool, and I am not. And I said, "This is really fun." It was like Mr. DJ, and she said, "It's by Rihanna." I said, "Oh yeah, Rihanna," because I recognized her voice. So I just went home, just looked up Rihanna because I wanted to see what else she had done, and I found out that she was from Barbados. And she was a descendant of the Red Legs. And I thought, what are the Red Legs? And that is a group of Irish people who were taken from their homes in the 1600s primarily, but this practice continued through the early part of the 1800s. They were stolen away. King James said he was tired of the poor Irish littering his streets. And so they rounded them up in droves, put them on ships, and sold them away to Barbados, Jamaica, several of the Caribbean islands. A lot of them became indentured servants, but some of them were actually enslaved. So I was fascinated by this. So, but of course, slavery in these days, people just, it's kind of a taboo thing. My first three books were on the Civil War, and I'm even being told now, you know, don't write about the Civil War, it's too edgy. But God kept bringing the story back. And so I got this idea about a girl who was taken from Ireland when she was a child, has no memory of it, but washed up on the shores after a shipwreck in Barbados. And it's her journey to finding God. The other thing, or how God found her, really. The other thing that really fascinated me was I've been dwelling on the scripture that the heavens itself declare the glory of God. But how does a pagan person who's never heard the name of Jesus Christ come to know God? So that's what those three things are what I explored in this book. And I don't recommend writing a mute protagonist. It's difficult. It took me a while to get the hang of how to do it and the best way to do it. And I had to go through several bumpy first chapters and rewriting. But her viewpoint is in first person, and the hero's is in third person. And I just asked my launch team, does this work? And they're like, we love it. It works great. So I was like, thank you, Lord, because I was really worried. I thought this is going to be too jolting for some readers. So it was fun, but I don't recommend doing it. I learned a
That
lot.
would be difficult, you know, especially when you have a character who's essentially not going to speak or speak a lot, at least.
Not much.
Not much. So, oh wow, there's so many things to trail off there on that conversation. Okay. So, first of all, let's go there. It's the elephant in the room. You did discuss slavery and such in this book. You did go there, which is a difficult topic these days. So tell me a little bit about your thought process there. What made you go there, and what things were you careful with, and what things do you feel were important to be explored within the story?
Well, the way I had to approach it was this wasn't a nonfiction book about Irish slavery. This wasn't a nonfiction book about slavery in general. So I thought, I'm not going to try to inform the reader because that's not really my job. I just wanted to tell a good story. So I didn't make it the focal point. It is, but it isn't. You'll see You'll see enslaved people in the story, but the story is not about the Irish slave trade. It just happens to be my main character's backstory. So that's the way I could balance it. And the thing that I think made some of my friends really nervous, like saying, you can't tell the story. It's about slavery. I said, but it happened because we still have the Redlegs living in Barbados today, is what they're called, which I would think, oh, is that derogatory there? That's just what they're called. And so I thought, well, if there's still a lineage of people there, they deserve to have part of their story told, So I'm part Irish, so I thought, well, I'm part Irish, that's not, that would sound
There
something. There we go. I never ended up on a plantation working under the sun, but and of course it's all slavery. We've had slavery since almost the beginning of time, so it's
We
just,
really
it's
have.
a horrible thing. But to me, there's no, if it's told well and you seek as much truth as you can, preparing, I think that's a good way to honor those who have suffered, because many of them just didn't have a voice, whether it was literally like somebody with mutism or they were never given that opportunity. So I think it's important to tell those stories so we can learn from them. But, and I tell everybody, it's at the same time, it's fiction. So, we don't have to be so, strident and everything like you would with a nonfiction story. So that's the way I could, to me, it just had to serve the redemption story and the character story well.
Well, and I think it's one of those things where the concept of slavery is very, it's very much associated with, like we picture the Civil War days or early American history where they were enslaving the indigenous people, they were enslaving the Africans that were coming over, and not at all to diminish either of their place, but there was other forms of slavery, maybe not to the degree of some of those, but there were other forms of slavery going on at the same time. And to touch on something like that with the Irish slavery, the Irish really did suffer through a lot of different types of discrimination throughout their entire history, from the other nations and such that were, coming in on them too. So it's interesting to get that point of view. I didn't realize the connection with the Irish and Barbados, though. That's a new one for
Yeah,
me.
that was completely new to me. So I began just going down, how historical people we are. We get on something and it's just, we get hyper creative and focused on it. We just want to learn as much as, and we may never use it, but I always feel better. I had a friend that sent me a meme the other night that said, my next book's about an astrophysicist. When did you learn about that? Last night, I went down YouTube and, but it's very, to me, it was super interesting. And I'm always looking for stories that haven't been told, can I tell this story well, or can I tell it with a unique twist or an angle? But there's so much history out there. My son, we were doing homeschool this morning, and one of the things he is supposed to know is about James Cook and the exploration to Antarctica. And he said, "Why does nobody talk about this?" I said, "I don't know, but it's super brave to not have a map of the world and be going down to Antarctica and, what he went through." And I said, "I think I'm always looking for good stories, because sometimes we get stuck in a rut. We tend to get cookie cutters in our story writing, and so it's good to find new to us things." I just, somebody sent me something the other day. I thought, oh, that'd be fun. It's a World War II idea, but there was a mime in France that smuggled children, Jewish children, to freedom, and he taught them the skill of miming to help them be quiet as he led them
Oh
down.
my
I mean, I
goodness.
thought, what a neat story that would be. Never heard that before.
Well, I think one of the things with fiction too, and maybe it's just me, but I would say I think it's important for readers to remember, regardless of what genre, what the topic is, the content, et cetera, fiction is a representation usually of something awful that has been turned into either something redemptive, or it stays in its awful form through the book so that it's seen in its awfulness.
That's right.
So fiction to me has never been meant to be necessarily palatable. It's either entertaining or it's kind of like not, it's challenging, right? And so I think
Absolutely.
that's where historical fiction sometimes like tiptoes on those borders of, ooh, should we talk about
Can we
this?
go
Do we have the
there?
right to? Have we earned
Yes.
the responsibility to? And so I think if it's approached sensitively, that's really a key factor. So
That
that's great.
was the biggest thing for me with my first story, Engraved on the Heart. I wrote from a perspective, well, the whole story isn't written, but I had an enslaved man in there, and I've never been enslaved. I did not want to represent that poorly. So I went through the National Archives and found actual transcripts of enslaved people from the project they did in the 1930s to capture their stories before that generation passed away. And I used literal things that they said because I thought, yeah, it's a very fine line you have to walk. So I want to represent what these people suffered well. But knowing it's fiction, it's not going to be, perfectly straight up and down. So yeah, it's a big task sometimes.
Yeah, it is. It is. But there's nothing better than hearing it from the actual records and from the mouths of the people that actually went through those situations. And so you look at your story now. So we're in Barbados in what, 1816?
1816. That's
1816.
right.
So we just turned the century into the 19th century and we're in Barbados. So what was Barbados like back then if you were washed up on the shore as an Irish purchased slave?
You would have worked, depended on the purpose, what value they saw in you early on. In the story I wrote, my main character's name is Evelina. She was heard humming to herself, and one of the house slaves thought she had a pretty voice and told the master of the plantation. So he wanted to keep her in the house to help entertain guests when they came in. Things like that. If you were strong, you would have more than likely been working in the sugar fields. That's still, we get a lot of sugar from Barbados, but they would have to grow the cane, cut it, press it, boil it, anything you could possibly do to sugarcane. So it was all the time job. And in fact, there's a reference I found that I thought was interesting. I have my hero comes from South Carolina. He is the son of a slave trader and is just kind of waking up to really what's going on behind the scenes with this. And so he's a little shocked and taken off guard when he sees what the situation really looks like. And yeah, a lot of South Carolina at that time was buying their sugar cubes for their tea and coffee straight from Barbados. So there was a neat little link I could put in there, where the master of this plantation says, "You, the sugar you enjoy in your coffee, that comes straight from here." So that would have been the thing there. Barbados is interesting because at that time there was a big pocket of Christianity, but there was also a big focus on polytheism and almost like, magic voodoo type of stuff. So some people believed, especially of the enslaved, there would be a mix of those. It depended on where they were brought up and how they were taught. But so for Evelina, because in her story, her master does not know or respect God. There's only one slave on the plantation that knew Jesus, never talked with him about her, and he was kind and would bring her little gifts from nature and was always had her curiosity humming about, who is this God? Who is he talking about? What does that mean? Can he see me? How big is he? He's got to be bigger than me, and all these questions she would have, but she couldn't voice them. She was just locked behind all of this silence. So to me, I thought that was interesting. And I think they're quite Christian now from what I've read. But yeah, it had a lot of, like you would imagine, a lot of Caribbean influence from different cultural groups that came in and affected their beliefs.
I suppose it must have been a really, like, culturally speaking, I mean, slavery aside, it was probably a very rich culture with so many
Oh, yes.
different backgrounds kind of collecting in one area just because of sugar for whatever the
Yes.
purpose, whether you were wherever you landed on the caste system,
Yes.
it had to
And
have
they
been
have.
quite
They have beautiful
intriguing.
buildings there, which are like big, huge cathedrals that are just absolutely beautiful, carved in stone, right on the edge of cliffs that are just what you would see in a tropical paradise. What I got really interested in were the group of Quakers who worked down there too. They were very anti-slavery, big abolitionists. So some of them would go down there and preach to people about, and I've got an abolitionist Quaker in this story, Benjamin McGee, and he's based on a real man who never, they say he never grew. He was under 5 feet tall. He was little bitty. And he said the real Benjamin, I think, is, what was his real name? Benjamin McGee is the name of my character. Benjamin something. I'll have to look it up later. If I hadn't mentioned it, I'd be able to, spill it right out. But he said that God knew, made him small because he knew the world couldn't handle him in any bigger package, because he was just
Oh,
a
I love
fireball.
that.
He was a fireball of a preacher, and made his whole life's goal to see people set free from slavery. So he's
Oh,
the
I
one
love
that really
that.
gets our hero thinking about what's really going on. So it's pretty neat. So I was fat, because there is so many cultures down
Oh,
there, and they would have seen everything.
Oh, yeah. Wow. It sounds like a really layered book, very character driven
Yes,
story.
very character driven. Yeah. And that's something that I personally like. When you write anything, you need to have a good plot, you need to have good characters, but if you really dig deep into the psychology of your characters, it usually provides enough conflict to keep the story humming along.
Humanity is nothing if not extremely layered and
That's
troubled
right.
and full
That's
of
right.
interesting corners, as evidenced by the way we started this podcast. I mean, let's just face it. We aren't necessarily on the tip top of humanity when it comes to our sense of reason, but there is a
And then
reason
maybe
it's
that's a
called
PK
Mad
thing.
Lit.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I do prison ministry, and I was just at a prison this past Thursday and this past last week. And I was telling some of the guys, I said, "So I'm a pastor's kid. I'm a PK. Are there any other PKs out there?" I kid you not, 20% of them raised their hands. I said, "Why does that not surprise me? You guys all ended up in jail. You're bringing the rest of us down." Of course, they were cackling, but it's true. We're goofy sometimes.
Well, you have to be able to laugh, and I
That's
think,
right.
and I don't want to say make fun of the situation, but find brevity where you're at,
Man,
regardless of how difficult it is.
humor is a tremendous, tremendous asset.
It is. My mom, when she knew she was passing away, I won't even say some of the things she said, but it was so, like, completely wrong about passing away and what to do when she was gone and do with her things and her remains. And I mean, to the point that she had me in stitches and I was on the floor laughing, which is, you kind of want to, you don't want to be in that way when you're dealing with
Right.
a situation that's as troublesome as saying farewell to your parent. But on the
Yeah.
flip side of it now, I look back and those are the things that
A
stand
gift.
out the most, is that
Yes.
gut-splitting laughter that we shared over some of the most ridiculous things that we'd
Oh.
say. And
Makes life bearable. You can get through
it
anything
does.
with a good sense of humor. You
You
really can.
can.
And God.
You
Yeah.
can. Yeah,
Us too.
that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And music too. I was thinking the
It's
other day
true.
about, I was actually thinking about the American slave history, and the Africans that were taken from their homeland and then brought over here. And when I was a child, my grandfather was in a quartet. And I
Okay.
didn't realize it as a kid, but a lot of the songs I grew up hearing were the old spirituals that were written and sung in the fields. And so the other day I was thinking through some of those songs, because for me they were just part of my upbringing.
Right.
Because my grandpa sang them, then my dad sang them to me, and they were my lullabies growing up. And I didn't even realize there was any sort of racial discrepancy. It was just these stories of people going through trouble and their faith stories, right?
Who
And
they're leaning on.
what they were leaning on. And some of these songs you probably wouldn't sing anymore because, they were written back then with terminology we don't use now, so I don't really go
Right.
around singing them. But I was thinking, man, the testimonies of the people that came and developed such great faith under such gigantic trial of being enslaved, and yet their vision was on something so far beyond where they were. It was on the eternal, because that's all they had hope in
Yeah.
at that point.
They had nothing to cling to in this life other than their children, or, like you mentioned, their parents or whatever. But everything was on God. Trisha Goyer called me the other night. We were talking about this very thing. And I said, "Man, I hope she's her, grandmother is ill." And we were talking about just caring for family members and different things. And I said, "I hope things get better for you." And she said, and quickly, and she said, "But without those hard times, our faith just goes." Psh. I said, "Honestly, a stagnant pond becomes scummy, and I don't want to be scummy. I want to be good, fresh, clean water, and that takes movement. And we just don't like it. None of us like
No,
it."
we don't like it. It's never fun, but you're absolutely right in that there's those trials that build the faith. And interestingly enough, and as it sounds like in your book, it pushes people on a journey to discover what more is out there. Because if we're going through this, is what is the point?
Yes.
What's the reason? for this? Is there any reason for this at all, or should we just call it quits now and be done with it? I mean, really. And so it's, I'm assuming your character probably goes through a similar journey.
She does. In fact, you hit the nail on the head. There's one scene where she is exhausted, tired. She's laying in her upstairs room, her cramped room, and she sees a line of ants, going across the baseboard. And she said she's watching them with this military precision that the overseer would envy. And she said, "Is that all there is to life? Is you get up and you work and you work and you do what somebody tells you and then you die. There has to be more to it than that. Otherwise, what's the point of living?" So she's really going through this coming of age, who am I, story, and doesn't really have anyone much that she can lean on except for one or two characters. And that's when she meets Josiah, our hero, who shows her what faith is. But I mean, the whole story is hard because she has to learn a lot of things the hard way. Some people just have to do that. And some of it in her case was ignorance, but some of it was just, I don't have a voice, so I'm gonna speak up how I can. And sometimes that was by doing things she shouldn't have. So and that's the struggle we all go through, is trying to figure out who we are in God's eyes. So
Absolutely. Well, I think this book will probably resonate with quite a few people then. So it's called To Speak
I
His
hope so.
Name. It releases March 4th. Where can people get a hold of a copy?
Amazon.com. It's up for pre-order right now, and I have links on my pages and all my social media, and you can find me at www.tarajohnsonstories.com.
Awesome. Well, Tara, thank you so much for being with us today and for all of our wide variety of conversation today here on the podcast.
Thank you so much. It was a blast.
Thank you for joining Mad Lit Musings, where every conversation is a journey and every book is a new adventure. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast player or check us out on YouTube, and let's explore the fascinating intersection of faith, society, and storytelling together.